Special Committee to Order at approximately 3:05. Today is March 31st, 2009. Present at the committee are Representative Tuck, Representative Johansson, Representative Peterson, Representative Ramirez, and myself, Co-Chair Edgman. Today we have three bills on the agenda. You will note that we have House Bill 196 pertaining to the Alternative Energy Revolving Loan Fund, House Bill 166, the Southeast Energy Fund, and then House Bill 66, Net Energy Metering. And on House Bill 66, the intent is to hear the bill and to hold the bill today. As always, we ask that you turn your cell phones off and abide by that rule, if you would please. And with that, as we welcome Co-Chair Millett. We have her place all warmed up for here at the table. I'd like to ask my staff, Adam Berg, to come to the table and introduce House Bill 196 to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Adam Berg, staff to Representative Edgman. House Bill 196 takes an existing loan fund, the Alternative Energy Loan Fund. It's been on the books since 1978. It makes a few simple changes to existing statute. First, it eliminates the sweep provision. Second, it changes the loan rates. And third, it repeals the transfer or sales of mortgages and notes. It also adds language to allow a variety of capitalization opportunities should they arise. And it also adds high efficiency wood pellet stoves to the program's definition of alternative energy systems. This fund was basically mothballed in 1990 when statutes were amended to sweep the funds, sweep the balances from the fund to the general fund, and it really hasn't been a revolving loan fund in what you would think of a revolving loan fund to be since. So that's the basics. I mean, it really is a pretty simple bill. We're just changing the statutes that have been there to eliminate that sweep provision so it would keep any money that went into the fund. And I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Just for the committee's understanding, this is a House Energy Committee bill. It was introduced after learning during our rural trips up in Nome and Kotzebue through Dillingham that there appears to be a need to have low interest rate loan program for individuals and others to access energy infrastructure items. And with that, committee members, any questions for Mr. Berg? If not, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. So this fund was swept out in 1990. Is that correct? So there's a zero balance in the fund right now?
Yeah, there's a zero balance in the fund that gets swept yearly. So if there's any outstanding payments owed on those old loans, they'd be paid into the fund, but then that money would get swept out at the end of the fiscal year.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. So the plan would be to seed this fund again with new funding to create a revolving fund. Is that
That would be the idea. If we get this sweep language out and if there's any money that becomes available, ultimately this would go to finance from here. There's going to be a variety of energy related bills sitting there, and this would make this at least a viable fund if they choose to fund it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Adam. We do have a couple of amendments that we can consider next. We'd have Mr. Winter come to the table, and while Greg's up here, we can have him kind of walk us through these amendments and decide as a committee whether we want to just treat them conceptually or actually address them today. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, for the record, Greg Winninger, the director of the Division of Investments. We are the agency that administered this this program for a number of years. And as Mr. Berg mentioned, the fund basically operated since early or late 70s until about 1987 was the last loan that was made under the program. We ended up making about 2,900 loans in total over that time frame. And then what happened was in 1986, the legislature started removing money from that fund, and they put language in there in 1990, which essentially says that those funds are swept out at the end of each year. There is a small balance, in answer to your Representative Peterson's question, there is a small balance still in the fund. We have a couple of judgment accounts that have been around for a number of years, and we have a small amount of money which is in the foreclosure reserve to take care of that. And then those funds, again, each year, they're swept out. So we really haven't made any new loans since 1987. I think the idea here is if some funding becomes available, this legislation would allow this program to start operating again, basically. The changes that are made were basically kind of to bring the program up to date in terms of interest rates and collateral and whatnot. Would you like me to speak to the amendments, Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, I missed
it. Would you like me to speak to the amendments at this point, or?
Greg, can you speak maybe a little bit about the low interest rate aspect of the bill and some of the terms that a potential borrower would have to comply with in order to participate?
Sure. Basically the interest rate, what we're proposing is that the interest rate would be tied to the prime rate, prime plus one. So in today's market, you're looking at around a 5% loan. The bill also stipulates a floor of 5% and a ceiling of 8%. And it would be tied to the prime rate. So basically, as the prime changes between those two, the cap and the floor, we would change that rate. These are fixed rate loans, however, so at the time you take out the loan, whatever the rate is at that point would be what you're fixed for the term of the loan. In terms of the collateral requirements, essentially what we did was we suggested putting language which says that you would take a deed of trust against the resident, residents receiving the improvements. And so those are the two basic things. I think one of the amendments that you're going to talk about kind of relates to a little change to that. Right now it says you have to have a first deed of trust. We would propose taking out the word first so that you have a little bit more latitude. You may have a situation where you have somebody that has a residence and they want to receive some improvements that would increase their energy efficiency, and if you had a first deed of trust requirement, it may prevent you from making them a loan. So our suggestion would be to continue with the lien but not make it mandatory that it be a first lien. In many cases, it will be a first lien. For example, on a pellet stove, you'd probably take a security interest in that stove and you would have a first. But there may be some circumstances where it would be good to have that that added flexibility.
And committee members, that'd be page 1, line 12. Removing the word first before lien. So that would be conceptual amendment number 1, just for discussion purposes. Mr. Wininger, can we go to amendment number 2?
Right, and amendment number 2.
Do we like me to move amendment number 1?
Would that be the pleasure of the committee to Representative Johansson?
Before we got into amending, whatever, however you want to do it, but I did have a couple questions, maybe. Okay. When this gentleman's done, I just had a couple questions for Mr. Berg or you or the one of the two chairs that introduced this before we get into amendments.
Okay, so if it's the pleasure of the committee, then we would move on to amendment 2 just to discuss it conceptually while we have Mr. Wininger at the table.
Okay, yeah. Proposed amendment number 2 basically would amend 4588-020A, which basically says that the department may, right now it says make loans for the purchase, construction, and installation of alternative energy systems. And the language that was suggested to add to that would be that are located in the state. This program, at the time it operated, all of these projects were in the state, but there was nothing really in the statute that specifically says that. And so we think that it would make sense just to be real clear on that these are for projects located in the state.
Thank you, Mr. Manager. Representative Johansson.
Yeah, and I guess my first question, this gentleman may be able to answer, on page 2, line 4, having the Wall Street Journal in statute, is that something that we normally do, or seems like that's a business that could go out of business tomorrow? Is there a different way to refer to that, or is that how we usually do it?
Through the chair, Representative Johansson, actually that is patterned after language. It's in our other statutes that we've done for a number of years, but I think it is a valid point. That is a typical way to tell what the prime rate is.
And I don't know who can answer this one, but just curious about page 2, lines 23 through 26, the addition of high-efficiency wood pellet stove and the change from simply wood to unprocessed wood and what the definition is. And because we got a lot of wood down where I'm from, and I don't want to cut anybody out of the opportunity to heat Alaskans.
We'll ask Mr. Berg to come back to the table. You could identify yourself for the record.
Address for the record, Adam Berg, staff to Representative Edgman. Yes, we added high-efficiency wood pellet stoves, and the or unprocessed wood that you see below is apparently just the drafter's way of saying again that a normal wood stove does not qualify for this program. And if you see, they had deleted the word wood before. They decided unprocessed wood was the correct definition. If that makes sense. It's saying the same thing. It took out wood and added unprocessed wood.
Yeah.
And the reasoning beyond that, I can't tell you. Drafter's choice there.
I'm not going to hold up the bill, but it's something that I'm going to investigate because I want to make sure, you know, if we've had folks in my district talk about ways to provide firewood as part of their timber sales. They have a certain amount that they can't use for high-end things, and they're talking about providing that to other Alaskans as a means of heating, and I just want to feel more comfortable. But I don't want to stop the bill from leaving committee, but it's something that the co-chair should know that I'll be pursuing, finding a little more definitions, and we can catch up to it either in its next committee or further down the line. So,
and if you'd like, Representative Johansson, we could have Mr. Berg follow up on that and get back to the committee. I would concur with Adam's description. The bill drafter explained it to us. That was more a term of art or a technical drafting term than it was any term that had any meaning, you know, outside of just sort of wood.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, it's my fault I didn't do my homework, so I don't want to slow it down, but it goes to finance and the floor, so.
No.
I've got plenty of time to figure it
out. That's an excellent question and a good point. Representative Tuck?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just following along with the same lines, we saw in Dillingham some demonstrations of a soapstone stove. And we also saw a furnace that was fired by wood as well. Would this provision exclude those two types of projects from being included with the funding? No, it would include them?
No, it wouldn't not include them.
It would not include them?
Mr. Berg, chip in if I'm not describing that properly.
Unfortunately, I wasn't actually on that part of the trip, so I'm not exactly familiar with exactly how the units work that you guys toured in Dillingham. So I don't know what to tell you without a little more of a description.
Representative Tuck, let me just say, and I think this sort of piggybacks on the concern that Representative Johansson had, that certainly bears maybe a little more investigation. But that was our intent, speaking with the bill drafter to, you know, basically have the term wood there so that it was all-encompassing. And he came back with unprocessed wood and certainly the addition of a high-efficiency wood pellet stove. But his message to us was to, you know, to make these terms as complete as possible.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
And I think from lines 19 through 22, it refers to wood stoves with catalytic converters, steam hot water, ducted hot air central heating system that uses wood or coal. And that is exactly, I believe, the type of device that we saw when we were in Dillingham. So I think that's covered. My real concern is just to understand what the term unprocessed wood meant legally. And that's why I don't have any problem letting it go and chasing that down later.
Thank you, Representative Johansson. Representative Tuck?
And that's true for that one, the one device, but there's also the soapstone one, which we saw was a pretty neat unit, which I don't know if it would, I don't think it has a catalytic converter or is ducted hot air. It might be considered ducted hot air, but I just wanted to make sure that we weren't excluding that on, based on what Representative Johansson was bringing up. So, okay, thank you.
Representative
Tuck. Chair.
I think it's covered under... I think it's covered under the ducted stove. Was it ducted stove that we saw?
Okay.
We can find it.
Yeah. But, Mr. Chair, the intention was to just not allow just any old wood stove to qualify. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, correct.
All right. Thank you very much.
Not just your normal wood-burning stove.
Representative Peterson, no question. Well, we do have committee members two conceptual amendments before you. They're pretty straightforward. We had Mr. Wininger at the table a moment ago to walk us through the intent of the two amendments. I guess I would ask the pleasure of the committee in terms of formally offering them at this time.
For amendment number one.
Amendment number one has been moved. Is there any objection to amendment number one?
I object for discussion purposes.
Representative Peterson.
I just wanted to look at this for a second here. It's line 12.
Okay, we'll call Mr. Wininger back up the table.
No, this is on the first lane, so okay, so this was someone.
Greg, can we have you come up the table, please?
Sure.
Amendment number one, if you would just once again kind of walk the committee through the purpose behind it. Representative Peterson.
I think I understand it. I just wanted to make sure we could discuss it if someone else had any questions on it. This basically just allows someone to, if they had already had a first mortgage, they could be able to maybe take out a second deed of trust to buy the improvement or whatever it was that they were getting through this program. Is that correct?
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Peterson, that's correct. Yeah, it just gives us the flexibility. If somebody has a project already and they have a first, this would allow us to do something other than a first, which probably would be a second deed of trust.
Is there further discussion on amendment number one? Representative Peterson, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Okay. Amendment number one has been adopted then.
Move amendment number two.
Member number two has been adopted, and I'll object for the purposes of discussion. Mr. Wininger, do you want to also address that amendment, please?
Sure. Amendment number two, basically what that does is it makes it very clear that these projects are intended to be in the state of Alaska. The original legislation didn't have any reference along those lines, although all the loans were made in Alaska, and that was certainly the intent. We think it makes sense to make that very clear in the statute that that is the case.
Are there further questions on amendment number two? If not, I'll remove my objections, and amendment number two will be adopted. So with that, we have an amended House Bill number 196 in front of us. Again, I'll defer to the pleasure of the committee.
Representative Edmund. I move House Bill 196/LS0754/R as amended, attach fiscal notes, individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to moving House Bill 196 as amended out of the committee? Not hearing any. Representative Tuck?
I just want to add a zero fiscal note.
A zero fiscal note. That is correct. Thank you. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee document. And be back in a moment. We'll call the House Special Committee on Energy back to order. Next, we have House Bill 166, an act relating to the Southeast Energy Fund.
Hey,
Thomas.
Settle down. He has friends on this committee.
Yeah. I thought I did.
Had the opportunity to be in front of Representative Thomas and Finance.
Way back. Whoa.
Whoa. Who knew?
Well, I got my answer.
Oh, okay.
And the answer is, if you're a Tier 3, you get the compensation. If you're a Tier 4, the answer is no. So that was interesting. Okay. He knows what we're talking about, Mr. Chairman, members.
A wedding cake?
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, our co-chairs, for hearing HB 166. HB 166 is a what we call the Southeast Energy Fund.
Representative Thomas, can I get you to identify yourself?
Representative Bill Thomas from District 5, and with me is Casey Schroeder-Hoff. I only come here to present the bill, and she gets the technical portion, so. And I bleep out all the big words and use the small ones, so bear with me, Mr. Chairman and members. 1993, the Alaska State Legislature established the Southeast Energy Fund as a holding tank for money that could be later be used and appropriated to the Swan Lake Tyee hydroelectric projects. Since then, the need and fever for hydroelectric power in Southeast has grown. Hydroelectric power is the most readily available source of renewable energy in Southeast. And some people refer to Southeast as the Saudi Arabia of renewable. However, despite this readily available resource of renewable energy, most communities in Southeast Alaska remain heavily dependent upon diesel-generated electricity. And I think our highest rate is 83 cents a kilowatt before PCE, and most of them around 58 cents a kilowatt. Even if these high electrical costs have crippled our communities, and I don't have to look like I'm preaching to part of the choir here, Mr. Chairman. So what we're trying to do with this is, in the event, who knows, maybe oil creep back up, we'll have some surplus money we can dump in there, or we can, you know, try to take care of the rest of Alaska when we take care of other parts of the state. Meaning, you know, if we have the, let's say we build this Susitna Dam, maybe we could put some money down here in the Southeast. If you're looking at a $12 billion project, what's another billion? A billion here, a billion there, pretty soon we'd be talking about real money. So anyway, HB 166 broadens the authority of the Southeast Energy Fund to include all power projects within Southeast Alaska. In doing so, it allows for funding mechanism for construction of power generation projects in Southeast and the completion of the regional electrical intertie. And we do have people that are visualizing all of Southeast with an intertie with small hydros built throughout Southeast and putting them all together. Mr. Chairman, just for the, also in my little hometown of Haines, that we have an intertie with Skagway, and Skagway has two hydro projects, but it seems like about time they build one, the need for another one is there, because we have a growth of electricity need for 3 to 5% a year. And I think people are finding out that electricity is cheaper than oil at times, especially this last winter when it hit $5 a gallon for home heating fuel, that to go and turn on an electric heater was probably a little cheaper for quick heat and momentarily heat. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask the committee to move the bill, and someday, like I said, we get rich, we can put money into there. Now, I know one of the questions is going to be, why is it the Southeast Energy Fund? Why not Northwest? But I think you can do the same thing with your own putting money together, putting a bill together, because I hate to see us have to fight over the last dollar in the fund. I mean, for an example, we can see what happened in the energy area. They can't spend the money they have there because nobody can agree how to spend it. So I think if we have regional pools, we'd be a lot better off.
Thank you, Representative Thomas. Any questions for the bill sponsor or his staff on House Bill 166? Representative Johansson, did you?
Yeah, I didn't think that word you stumbled on was a real big word.
I know. Well, I had to replace them, yeah.
Reminds me of my old boss.
Well, I'm reading a statement here, and I, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Thomas.
Just let you know that the first one she had was had bigger words on it, so I told her to tone it down a little bit and make it bigger writing. You know, I have to sit here and squint, so you know, after 4 years, you think she'd learn, but... Anyway, yes, the big word hurt me there, Mr. Representative Johansson.
Any further comments or questions for the bill sponsor or staff on House Bill 166? Representative Tuck?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. On page 1, line 12, can you explain to me the authority? Is that the... that's not the... well, can you explain to me who the authority is and how that works?
Good.
This is the authority of the act itself, right?
For the record, Casey Schroeder-Hotch, staff representative Thomas, through the chair, Representative Tuck, the authority referred to in this section is the Alaska Energy Authority.
Okay.
Any further questions, Representative Tuck?
No, not at this time. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Is there any public testimony on House Bill 166? Mr. Venables, do we have you online?
Yes.
Would you state your name and affiliation, please, and begin your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robert Venables. I am the Energy Coordinator for Southeast Conference, and I thank you and the committee for the opportunity to speak in support of House Bill 166. I have submitted my testimony in writing that's before you today, so I will not take your time to read each point, but if I may summarize just for a moment, just to follow up, and thank you again for the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to introduce Southeast Conference and the Southeast Intertie to the committee. And this bill here is just, I think, a very timely mechanism to put into place so that we can see continued progress in developing our natural resources here in Southeast Alaska. And as Representative Thomas said, the Rail Belt Energy Fund, which was established and set into place for those projects back in the 80s and 90s, is a funding mechanism that is really an ideal model for what this bill will do for Southeast Alaska, and will catch Southeast up to where the rail belt was as of 1993. This work that we have in the region will be costly and continues to escalate as time goes on. We've seen a lot of progress made to date, and we thank you for the funds invested in renewable energy these past couple of years. And we see the Swan-Tyee Intertie moving forward. We know that there's much work to be done. We have the congressional authorization of $384 million that the public law 106.511 was enacted, so we see vehicles that may be able to bring funding into Southeast Alaska. This bill would create the mechanism to hold and disperse those funds as well. I think as we presented a couple of weeks ago, the needs of the system are twofold, both the transmission lines for the Intertie itself, which we see costs approaching $500 million should that entire line be built out. Then the second system need to develop the capacity of other hydroelectric facilities along the Intertie system, whether it's Whitman Lake down in Ketchikan area, Ruth Lake by Petersburg, or Tackett's there by Sitka, or over on Prince Will Island where we see the Reynolds Creek project moving successfully forward. Each of these projects are costing more and more as time goes by, and the total cost that we've estimated for the entire region could be well in excess of $1 billion. So we see the need for a funding mechanism has always eluded us, and is one of the main reasons why when there was a call at the national level for shovel-ready projects, Southeast Alaska was not ready to construct the many facilities that we wish to see put into place. The communities of Southeast Alaska have worked together for many years to forge a vision to develop its vast renewable resources into a regional electrical system, and that Intertie and Associated Hydro will be an enabler of economic development that will assist us in our mission to develop strong economies, healthy communities, and a quality environment in Southeast Alaska. We think HB 166 can be the mechanism that can facilitate the construction of the critical infrastructure in our region and provide the energy security to Southeast Alaska. We thank you for considering this bill and just ask for your support in moving it forward. And thank you for the opportunity to testify today. And Southeast Conference remains as a resource for any questions you might have today or in the future. And, Mr. Chairman, that's my testimony, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Venables. Is there anyone else online who wishes to testify this afternoon? Not hearing so. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on House Bill 166? Representative Johansson.
I just thought of a question for the sponsor, probably for Casey.
Casey, do you want to come back up to the table, please?
Sorry, Bill.
What can I say? Where's the left?
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I'm just curious, looking at the existing law, which talked about power transmission intertie between Swan and Tyee, and then on page 1, line 14, it refers to hydroelectric projects. Is it your interpretation, understanding that also includes interties, or is that just, I just want to make sure they're all covered?
For the record, Casey Schroeder-Hodge, staff representative Thomas to the chair, the representative Johansson. That is my interpretation, and then if that's not the case, two would take care of that, because it's or other projects or programs is under the legislature to take care of Southeast Alaska.
Okay.
Representative Tuck.
I just want to make sure that I understand this correctly. But basically what this bill is doing is it allowing options for other funds to be able to come into, not just strictly from the state, and that the authority will be able to administer those funds as fit, as deemed needed in the region. And they can invest those funds and keep those funds within the Southeast energy. And that's basically what we're trying to do, is trying to activate it, keep it going, and allow for other resources, but not necessarily tying it to just Swan Tyee, but any type of I just want to make sure I'm correct in summarizing. Okay, thank you.
Any additional questions for the bill sponsor, staff? And not hearing anybody else to testify, we'll close public testimony at this time and move into committee discussion on House Bill 166. Any comments, committee members?
Can I apologize to the sponsor on record for
another question? Representative Johansson?
No,
sponsor himself
bad.
This time. What is the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
Can I try to make up to the sponsor and move version R out of committee, House Bill 166 version R, with zero fiscal note? With the attached zero fiscal note?
And individual recommendations?
Individual recommendations.
Is there any objection to the motion to move the bill out of committee? Not hearing none, so moved, and we'll take a quick at ease to do the paperwork.
You're taking my only job.
It came out wrong, Bill. I'm sorry.
Back to order. Next, we have House Bill 66 before us. Representative Seaton, if you want to come forward and introduce the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee. My name is Paul Seaton. I'm representative for House District 35, Homer and Seward areas. House Bill 66 is to promote alternative energy use by establishing net metering policy for Alaskan utilities. Net metering is the measurement of the difference between electricity produced or electricity purchased from a utility and the electricity produced from a customer's private generating equipment. Home and business owners who install renewable energy equipment such as solar panels, windmills, get their own electricity and will receive a credit for their excess generation. The credit is in kilowatt hours and reduces the customer's electrical bill in the following months. This carry forward of credits from the Alaska Renewable Energy Generation allows the customer to harvest excess energy during peak periods of renewable production, such as summer for solar or wind in the many of the winter months, and then carry that forward additional months. The net metering policy encourages private investment by allowing a customer generator to calculate the payment on their equipment through the calculation of the potential annual solar wind or hydro, hydro budget. And that's an important concept to think about, because what we're trying to do is stimulate people to put their own money into capital projects. And yet when you look at that, you can't tell from one day to the next what the renewable energy production will be. And so it's very important to be able to calculate that on an annual basis, so you can say you get an annual wind production or an annual solar amount, and you can calculate how much energy you'll be producing, and so you can get a payback period. It's like windows. When we replace windows in a house, we do that, and you can say, well, how much am I going to save over the time? You couldn't calculate that per day, because you don't know what the temperature that day is. So it's an annual cycle, and that's why it's important to have that on an annual basis. Alaska utilities also benefit under this legislation. By trading the homeowner a credit for electricity the homeowner puts into the grid, the utility does not have to generate more electricity to supply other customers. This can decrease the need for utilities to find large-scale power sources, and also using carbon fuel sources reduces carbon dioxide, and we all know where that's going. It's generally recognized also that utilities can gain about 10% in sales from distributed generation, as there little or no line loss. And what that is if you generate power 20 or 30 or 50 miles away and put it into a line and you're shoving it down the line, you have line loss, and you have line loss in your distribution center. If you have a distributed generation, in other words, if Representative Millett lives next door to Representative Edgeman and she generates excess electricity, that electricity comes out in the line and goes right into the very next meter. And so there's not the line loss that you have going through an entire distribution center. But that electricity is still sold to Representative Edgeman, and the tariff is set at anticipating a 7-10% line loss, so that that electricity that's sold is sold with an anticipated line loss that did not occur. So there is some gain there to the utilities as well. So the individual provisions of House Bill 66, net metering customer may have a renewable energy system size up to 25 kilowatts. 25 kilowatts has kind of been this break-even point where above that you get much more expensive transmission, much more expensive inverters, much more expensive switches and those kind of things. Below that, there's absolutely no possibility of backfeeding on a line. I mean, a 25 kW generator will not feed a whole residence. There's never been a case in the United States of a small generator backfeeding and hurting anyone while they're working on equipment or something like that. They just automatically cut out. And there's been testimony from the utilities when we were hearing a bill in the previous legislature that the cost of the systems under 25 kW and their complexity of the interconnection is much less than in larger systems. And net metering participation, another portion of this bill is that you can have a utility up to 1% of the retail peak system. So there's a limit so that you don't have... No one's talking about 50% of all the generation is going to come through net metering. In other words, and this is on a first-come, first-served basis, if you have a utility, what they would do is, as people come online and say, I want to do net metering and sign up, they would be able to do that on a first-come, first-served basis until you reach 1% of the peak demand, and then the utility could say, wait a minute, we don't want more than that because it might interfere. The history around the nation has been that utilities start small on this, and then they find that they're increasing 2.5-5%, because they found that it's much more beneficial to them to have the distributed generation, and those limits are very artificial. But at 1%, you know, there's really not a problem for utilities at all. This threshold would allow growth along the corridor But it would also, having a small limit, would protect rural Alaskan utilities so that they wouldn't be swamped. You wouldn't have, 50%, like I said, or 25% or 20% of the customers coming in with renewable alternative energy and want to sign up because there would be a limit. And furthermore, under this bill, the utility may limit the net metering to installations due to special circumstances. If you have a long transmission line out to a few houses and the utility decides it for engineering reasons, they don't want to see a large net meter facility out there, this bill specifically allows that utility to say you can only have a 2 kW or something else. So it's built into the bill that for engineering reasons they can limit it further than that. If a customer generates more electricity than they can consume, they receive the kilowatt hour credit. Now, these credits roll over from month to month, but at the end of the year, they're donated to the utility base. So the utility also gains if somebody puts in a 25 kW or a 10 kW system and goes on vacation, and they're rolling up credits that are unused, and at the end of the year, those are going to be donated to the utility. So the utility has a way. There was fear of carrying these credits for many years and that they would build up and that it could be a drag on the utility. And so this means that the utility base actually gains free electricity if there's a generator that generates more net electricity. The other part about this that's very important that it's in kilowatt hour credits. There's an IRS ruling, it's a private letter rule, that says that if you give people cash credit, in other words, they produce some electricity in this month, and it could be $10, it could be $2, it could be $100 worth of electricity, and if you pay them for that, that's a business transaction. So all of a sudden you get into a 1099 situation and a business transaction where they have to have a business license to correspond. But they also have said in that private letter ruling that a kilowatt hour credit is not considered a business transaction. So by having these kilowatt hour credits then donated at the end of the year, we eliminate all the IRS problems and we eliminate all the problems of having this business relation. You also eliminate the potential problem of the utility coming in and sending out a check for $2.29 some month and it's costing more than the tracking numbers. Another provision of this bill is that the customers of a small utility that's under a million kilowatts a year may vote to exempt the utility from the provisions of the bill entirely. There was some question as to whether we should just exempt all small utilities, and the consensus of consideration was we didn't want to say that just because you live in rural Alaska you shouldn't have availability of this. If the small utility wants to talk to its customer base and say this is going to be harmful to us if we have two or three windmills or solar generators around, the customer base can decide and vote themselves entirely out of this net metering process. So this was not to exclude rural Alaska but to allow on their case-by-case basis to each utility exclude themselves if they generate under a million kilowatts per year. default uniform statewide utility interconnection standard is established. It's the national standards for inverters for generation interconnections unless the RCA decides that it wants to have some more stringent. You have the book, the IREC book that's freeing the grid that's been there, and that's talking about the net metering across the United States. Generally, the national standards have proven very well, but if for some reason the people wanted the RCA to adopt some different standards, it's provided for in the bill that they could do that and superimpose them on top of the national standards. But the national standards, interconnect standards, are there for the default position. This bill prohibits additional fees for net metering. The financial benefits of net metering, what you're trying to do is you're having people invest their own capital to generate renewable electricity, and that amount of benefit can easily be swamped by excess charges that are put on by a utility. If a utility decides, hey, we just don't want to do this, well, we'll just put on a $50 a month fee, and all of a sudden there's no way that it makes sense. So that's the purpose of that portion. And there's nothing, this bill specifically says that there's nothing in here that prevents a utility from adopting a SNAP program such as Fairbanks has adopted, or such as Homer has adopted. In fact, Homer's is adopted in conjunction with net metering. Fairbanks has adopted one that is not in conjunction with net metering. And either one is permissible under this bill. And the other thing that's here is that there's nothing in here that prevents a utility from negotiating an individual power purchase agreement with a customer generator. Let's say you had somebody that had a small hydro capacity of 150 kilowatts and wanted to net meter. They could negotiate a power sales agreement with the utility for that excess electricity. So they could net meter, but you wouldn't want to say that, you wouldn't want the person to come in and say, well, I got to donate all the electricity, so they wouldn't put in 150 kW, which would be a lot better for most utilities because they wouldn't be burning diesel, just because net metering said you had to donate it all. So what this does is says that that's the normal circumstance. However, if somebody has a large reservoir of energy that they can do it, there's nothing in net metering that prevents that separate negotiation of a power sales agreement. So, Mr. Chairman and committee, this legislature has been very proactive at looking at alternative energy and renewable energy throughout the state, the Renewable Energy Fund, but those are all on the utility scale. I mean, we've got the grant program and all, but those are all utility scale grant programs. And what this does, it allows individual Alaskans to support renewable energy by investing their own money and being able to calculate a payback on their investment, and also to support their neighbors as well by connecting to the grid. You know, there's been talk of, well, we don't mind if, from some utilities, we don't mind if you do that, if you put in batteries and unplug the grid, that's fine, we don't mind losing the customer, which is kind of one of those things like, do we want a bunch of lead acid batteries around and having people disconnect from the grid? It really just doesn't make sense, especially when there are benefits to the utility as well as having this distributed electrical generation. I would like to point out that you do have three proposed amendments, and I'd just like to put them on the table so that they can be talked about, and I believe they're in your packet. And the first one is to page 2, line 21. And on page 2, line 21, what it would do is it would insert a new D there and then renumber accordingly. And that would just be that a customer generator owns the tax credits associated with the equipment and the renewable energy credits associated with the electricity it generates. There, I think you have a little packet of three amendments in there just
on the desk.
Should be on your desk, Mr. Chairman.
I see.
And it.
I don't have one.
Perhaps I'm seated. I think we all have copies now. If you want to continue.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And if the committee would look at the one that says page 2 after line 21. Afraid they didn't get in order in the packet. And that would insert a new D under what are the provisions here for a owner generator. And it just says that a customer generator owns the tax credits associated with the equipment and the renewable energy credits associated with the electricity it generates. And as you know, there's a federal tax credit of 30% for purchasing equipment. Just to clarify, there was some question of who would own those. And there's also a program, and you have the book called Freeing the Grid there. And on page 24 is a discussion of the renewable energy credit and how that works. So there is a federal program. It would have to be adopted by the state. Sometimes many states are coming along and putting in a credit program for people that will put in renewable energy. And this is just to make sure that everybody knows it's not the utility that owns those credits that are from the renewable generation. It would be the customer, and that would help them pay off the capitalization. The second proposed, just to put it on the table, would be page 2, line 25, just down below there. And there's been some question about the terminology of suppliers' annual peak energy usage, and if what this is doing is just replacing that with a more common term of suppliers' peak demand. So that's the peak amount that's used during the year, and that talks about the 1%, just so everybody's clear of what the 1% is of. And the third one, Mr. Chairman, is to page 3, lines 23 and lines 24. And that's just making this all internally consistent so that we're eliminating on page 24 as is defined in 4611-900, and we're substituting an alternative energy system as that term is that's what's being deleted, and what's being installed is alternative energy as identified in Section 1 of this Act. So Section 1 relates to the purpose and says that we're talking about alternative energy resources from solar, wind, tidal, geothermal, or hydropower sources, all non-carbon fuel sources. And that's one of the benefits of the bill is we're going to non-carbon fuels. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the committee's consideration.
Any questions for Representative Seaton, the bill sponsor for House Bill 66? Representative Johansson?
Representative Peterson is first.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we were out in Dillingham, we went to a gentleman's house, and he had two wind generators that he'd installed there. And he also had two meters on the side of his house, if I remember this right. And one of these meters measured how much usage he took off of the grid, and one measured how much he put back onto the grid. And I'm wondering, is that a typical situation? Is that the way this is usually done? Or is it usually do they have one meter and it turns both ways? Or what is there, or are both used?
Representative Seaton.
Through the chair, Representative Peterson. There's two things you can do, and it depends on the program that's there. All the meters in Alaska work so that they'll run backwards, which will give you the credit. Okay, so it goes forward for your usage, and if you generate some electricity but not the full amount that you're using, the meter basically slows down and brings in the net amount that you're using. And then if you generate more electricity, it will turn the meter backwards. And then when you start using more again, then it'll come back up. So that's the net meter fashion. There's also such as the SNAP program in Fairbanks and others. Sometimes you negotiate a sales power agreement, in which case you are metering out your electricity and selling it onto the grid at some cost that's negotiated, and you're using in at the full retail price. So one of the problems has been that if you sell out at the avoided cost, in other words, the fuel cost, That's a very low amount, but you're still paying full retail price for everything you use. And so it's very hard, and you see very little renewable energy used in small operations when you have that case. There is the SNAP program in which other members of the utility donate extra money to the utility to basically say they want to support renewable energy. And in that case, if there's a SNAP program in effect, which is in Fairbanks and there's also one in Homer now, then at the end of the year, that money is divvied up among all the people that generated electricity. But that's not a necessary program. You know, all of these are can be used across the United States. 42 states have adopted net metering as the way to promote renewable resource generation in across the United States. The federal government mandated that the all public utility commissions in our case the RCA had to by August of this last year, I think it was August, could have been October, look at and adopt or not adopt the national program of net metering. The RCA here chose not to adopt the national standard and come back and look at developing a Alaska-specific standard. But those are the ways the meters work. I mean, you can, one way promotes electricity usage quite a bit because people know they can offset their usage at their cost. And one should realize that the absolute, shall we say, worst case scenario for a utility would be if a generator, a customer generator, generated exactly the amount of electricity in a year that they used. But the maximum that the utility is out is it's like it didn't have that customer. But if they generate more electricity than they use, that's donated to the utility as free electricity. If they use 20% less electricity, they still have that customer, and it's just like the customer had insulated his house or put in new windows. He reduced his apparent usage by 20%. So those are very equivalent ways in which you can look at net metering, and most of the time net metering is going to offset only a portion of the person's electricity, and in some cases what's happened is that electricity usage has gone up because people feel that's they're generating this free electricity, and they'll use electricity to offset diesel heat for the house and those kind of things. It might be more expensive than electricity.
One follow-up. Follow-up for Sam Peterson.
And as I recall, this gentleman was paying, I think it was 42 cents a kilowatt hour and was receiving 28 cents a kilowatt hour. And he said it would he could pay off the expense of those wind generators in approximately 4.5 to 5 years. So he felt like it was a more than reasonable investment for him to make to, lower his energy usage and lower his energy costs, especially after he got the windmills paid off. So.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 3, line 25 through 31, talking about the exemption for the under 1 million kilowatt hours during the previous fiscal year. So you've created an exemption for small places that sell small amounts. I don't know what a million kilowatt hours is in the big scheme of things. But I could imagine probably my municipally owned utility in Ketchikan probably sells more than a million kilowatt hours, I would imagine. So by reading this, there's no out for a place like Ketchikan that owns a municipal system. So if the people that I represent in Ketchikan decide that they don't want to take part in net metering for maybe because they don't want windmills in the town, they have no choice. Is that how the bill's written? My utility would be forced to accept that sort of impact on the community. They wouldn't have any choice.
Representative Seaton.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Johansson, your community, of course, could have a height limit or could eliminate windmills entirely from its community if that's what it didn't want to do. Under this policy, is for net metering, but it doesn't. But it doesn't automatically require all municipalities to waive their rights to zone planning and zoning and any of those things. So, but as far as the utility exempting itself from promoting renewable energy by maybe somebody wanted to put in solar panel within the limits, it couldn't be over 25 kW, and they couldn't require any payment from the utility. It would only be a credit up to the amount that they use per year. So it's not a expense to the utility. I mean, the utility doesn't have to worry about here's somebody getting the retail price of electricity and they are selling 10 times as much as they use, because there's no sale in that aspect. It's a kilowatt hour credit, and the maximum amount could be as if that single person or that business disappeared from the grid if they produced that amount of electricity.
I understand that, Mr. Chairman.
Follow-up, Representative Johansson.
So basically, they would have to locally legislate their way around this mandate from the state statutes, basically.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Johansson, that's correct if you're talking about if they didn't want windmills. If you're talking about that they didn't want renewable energy and they didn't want net metering, then they would have to exercise some kind of other option, because if they wanted to also prevent micro hydro and they wanted to also prevent solar, that would be real tricky, because under this bill, it's just like most of our RCA or most of our standards for Alaska interconnect standards and all those things. Those are adopted statewide, and this is a statewide standard. Yes.
Additional questions, Representative Johansson?
I don't think so.
Okay. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When Representative Peterson asked about the 2 meters versus 1 meter, in this scenario, only 1 meter is necessary, right? Because basically a customer or a resident who is supplying power gets full credit for that meter either slowing down or coming to a stop. However, when it starts winding the other way, that credit goes to the utility for its cost, if you will, for providing the transmission lines and everything else. But in this case, this one scenario, you wouldn't see necessarily require a 2 meter. This system would only require 1 meter. Is that correct?
Representative Seaton.
Through the chair, Representative Tuck, that's correct. And our understanding is that all the meters that are used in Alaska can be used in conjunction with net metering the way they are. You would not have to install a new meter. The meter would just basically run backwards. So that's not to say that if a utility wants, they couldn't require a second meter, because they might want to know, instead of the net amount of electricity, they might want to know how much is being produced by the person's windmill or by their photovoltaic or by their micro hydro. And if they wanted to, there's nothing in here that prevents them from installing another meter so that they know the total amount that was put out, not just the net amount.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Johansson.
What are the fiscal implications? You say there's quite a few states that have net metering. I'm wondering about if there's a bond floated based on how much money flows in and out of the utility. Is there a huge effect on the money coming in and out of a utility? I mean, if you're basically getting rid of customers because they meet their own demand, does that mean less money's flowing in, and how would that affect Are there any examples of how that affects the money aspect? If we've got $20 million out on a bond, what does that do?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've talked to utilities all across the country. In fact, I think it was last month, we talked to Flathead Electric, which is in Montana, which is kind of a rural electricity electrical system. They've had a somewhat similar system, but then they've increased the amounts and everything else, and they said, you know, it's infinitesimal as far as the impact. They don't see any impact at all. In fact, they said that they have it far outweighed by just the customer relations and the customer satisfaction, and that the satisfaction of the people that know that they're promoting alternative energy. And I would also like to note in here that if there's a place that has renewable energy as their source, if you have hydro source and that's your power source, this bill would not be in effect. So if you have a renewable energy source and you're just having a carbon-based fuel as supplemental and emergency and backup, net metering would not apply in your area, because the goal is not to displace a municipality's renewable energy source or make it less cost-effective. The goal is to replace carbon-based high-cost fuels with renewables and to stimulate that for Alaska. So those places, and there are a number that have hydropower for their full source of power, except, like I say, on emergency and backup, then those net metering would not apply to at all. Because, again, we're not wanting to, and the only there is one area that was slightly problematic in this, and that was in Cordova, because they had 100% of their summertime was satisfied by hydropower, but only a portion of their wintertime usage was. So there was some question of how to handle that, and that's still one thing that needs to be looked at along the way. But again, if you're a renewable energy source provider, this does not affect you at all.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. to get back to the possibility of having more than one meter, if a local electricity company decided that was the way that they wanted to make this make it work in their area, they would have the independent option to ask people who were building their own systems to put two meters on and pay them a negotiated rate for what they produce and charge them a different rate for what they're selling to them. Would that be allowed in this bill?
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under this bill, any of the small utilities, I mean, I think, if I remember right, if it took 5 million kilowatt hours, that would only leave the rail belt. So, you know, Ketchikan, all of those would be out. So somewhere between under 5 million takes out the entire state except there, but so, just for perspective. But this bill would apply to all those areas that don't exempt themselves, and they could put in two meters and they could still have a power sales agreement. If somebody wanted to purchase more, or somebody was going to do more power than they're using, they could have a purchase sales agreement. If they wanted to institute a SNAP program, they could institute a SNAP program in addition to this. However, if it was a big utility and they wanted to say, well, we want to restrict the use of alternative fuels or renewable fuels, and we want to pay everybody avoided fuel cost of, you know, 2 cents a kilowatt, and we want to charge you the 14 or 17 cents a kilowatt, they wouldn't be allowed to do that. If the customer wanted to, they could connect to their own house and offset their own usage and avoid purchasing that amount of electricity. under this bill. That's what net metering is, and that's why it's been valuable across the United States to stimulate renewable energy usage. Because if you are paying avoided energy costs to a major utility, you cannot afford to, under any circumstances, ever get a payback on your system if that's all you're getting is avoided fuel costs.
Follow-up, Representative Peterson.
You know, that we have another bill that we're going to be looking at later, and I think that is that bill is going to be dealing with something that's called net billing instead of net metering. Do you know what the difference between those two ways of promoting alternative power? Could you explain that a little bit?
Representative Seaton.
Sure. There is another bill on net metering, and basically that bill says that it takes away the authority of the cooperatives across the state to be able to offer net metering. Right now, such as HEA just put in a SNAP program with net metering, and GVA instituted a SNAP program which may or may not have net metering in it. What that bill would do would say that the boards of directors cannot institute net metering without having a vote of their customer base as some procedure that would be set up by the RCA. So it's quite different than this, because it's saying you can't do net metering, take away the authority of the elected representatives of the cooperative, and unless the full membership votes on it. And the other thing that that's looking at is on a monthly billing cycle. So if you generate some more, let's say you're towards the end of the month and the wind's really blowing and your windmill's churning along, anything you generated in excess that month would be paid at the avoided cost, the wholesale cost, which is very low, even if you're using a lot of electricity, you know, in the first of the next month when the wind isn't blowing. So the difference is it's not an annual renewable energy budget. You can't look at and calculate that because you don't know when particular days are going to be that energy is. So that also, if you're doing that billing cycle where you're doing and crediting on a not the kilowatts, but on the actual avoided cost, then it is an IRS transaction, business transaction, and you run into all those problems, and that's why we've done this.
Okay. Thank you.
Any more questions for the bill sponsor? If not, we do have some people online who wish to testify this afternoon. And let me just run down the list here. Rich Gosaway with the Regulatory Commission. Are you just listening, Rich, or do you wish to
testify? I'm here to respond to questions.
Okay. Next, we have David Gardner with the Golden Valley Electric Association. David, the floor is yours if you wish to testify.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. For the last few years, Golden Valley Electric has very successfully promoted and encouraged participation in our Sustainable Natural Alternative Power Program, known as the SNAP Program. We believe the SNAP Program meets the needs of our members and the cooperative better than net metering. Because the SNAP Program is voluntary and self-supporting, it, unlike most net metering programs, does not cross-subsidize costs for producers by the members who choose not to participate. Also, because the SNAP producers share the funds collected from SNAP contributors, make no mistake, the Golden Valley program compensates SNAP producers at a higher rate, and currently at a much higher rate than they would receive through a net metering program. That being said, Golden Valley is participating in the Regulatory Commission of Alaska's Net Metering and Interconnection Standards workshops. Golden Valley believes that if the state were to adopt net metering and interconnection standards legislation, that the RCA should be the agency tasked with oversight and administration of the program. Therefore, Golden Valley encourages the committee to delay considerations of statewide net metering legislation while the RCA is investigating these issues. In conclusion, Golden Valley would like to thank the committee for their opportunity to participate, and of course, I'm available for questions.
Any questions for Mr. Gardner? Not seeing any. We'll go next to Mary Leland, Alaska Power Association. I think that's Marilyn. Are you online,
yes,
Marilyn?
Thank you. This is Marilyn Leland, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Power Association. APA is a statewide trade association that represents electric utilities that supply power to about a half a million Alaskans from Barrow to Unalaska and down the Inside Passage. And I appreciate the opportunity to comment on House Bill 66. Just as some background, last year, net metering was being considered by the Regulatory Commission in their docket on the adoption of regulations to implement amendments to the Public Utility Regulatory Policies Act of 1978, or PURPA, you may have heard, by the Energy Policy Act of 2005. In that docket, the Commission was required to make a decision as to whether they would adopt the federal standard for Alaska for net metering. They decided that they would not adopt the federal standard, but they opened an Alaska-specific docket to determine whether they would require net metering standards for Alaska. The docket was opened in January, and two workshops have already been held for interested parties to work on a proposed regulation. There's been very good participation in the workshops, and it's actually looking pretty promising that the working group will come to an agreement on a regulation. Because this docket is already underway, APA recommends that the legislature not take action on any of the bills requiring net metering that are currently before it. I also wanted to say that the utilities are not opposed to renewable generation. They are not opposed to purchasing power from consumer-owned generation, and they are not opposed to consumers reducing their electric purchases by using their own generation. The issue is making sure that a purchase power rate is not just fair for the seller of that power, but is equitable to all ratepayers of the utility who must share in any subsidized rate. APA believes the Regulatory Commission is well equipped to make that determination. So again, we are recommending that that the legislature not take action this year. So, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm also happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Marilyn. Not seeing any questions here at the table. We'll go next to Phil Steyer with Chugach. Are you on, Phil?
Yes, I am. Are you there?
Yes. Would you begin your testimony, please?
Yes. Good afternoon. My name is Phil Steyer. I am the Director of Government Relations and Corporate Communications for Chugach Electric Association. Chugach believes the Regulatory Commission of Alaska is the proper venue for a discussion of the many issues concerning net metering. Earlier this year, the RCA opened a docket and began the process that we believe will lead to an appropriate decision on net metering. This docket follows workshops on the topic the Commission held last year. Chugach believes it would be inappropriate to move forward with legislation at this time. Rather, we would suggest the Regulatory Commission of Alaska be allowed to complete its docket on net metering. And I thank you for considering our input.
Thank you, Phil. Not seeing any questions as well. Robert Reagan, are you online with ALMP?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Would you go ahead with your testimony, please?
Yes, sir. My name is Robert Reagan. I'm testifying on behalf of the Municipal Light and Power Department of the Municipality of Anchorage, commonly known as MLMP. As I testified, I believe, last week before this committee, MLMP believes that net metering would be a massive subsidy paid by the ratepayers of utilities to a few fellow customers who are in a position to own and operate net meter generation. I won't repeat those arguments here. Instead, I'll simply urge you not to take action on net metering before the RCA has had a chance to complete its work on the same subject. Net metering may appear to be a simple, beneficial idea, but it is not. It requires a commercial relationship between utilities and their customers that is generally considered unsustainable in other industries and therefore has the potential to cause serious, possibly even catastrophic harm in the utility industry. The RCA has developed an extensive record in its investigation of net metering in docket R0605 and is continuing to develop that record in docket R0901. It's certainly possible that the Commission, if given a chance to complete its work, will require utilities to offer net metering. But given the depth of its investigation, it has a better chance than the legislature does of avoiding unintended consequences. I therefore urge you to allow the Commission to take what actions it considers to be in the public interest before taking legislative action. If the Commission fails to take action considered appropriate by the legislature, there will at least be a complete record on which the legislature can act. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Robert. Not seeing any questions here as well. Is there anybody else online who wishes to testify this afternoon on House Bill 66? Is there anyone here in the audience who wishes to testify on House Bill 66? With that, it's the chair's intent to hold the bill for later consideration. We will keep public testimony open, and this is an agreement with the bill sponsor. Any closing comments from committee members at this time? If not, we'll adjourn the House Special Committee on Energy at 4:35.